Support for The Dirtbag comes from cable listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:01 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. Beside me, in the co-pilot's chair, as usual, Jim Gilbert. Fresh in from the liberal nook.
That's right.
South
good morning,
of town.
Good morning, Glenn. And it is nice. It was really cool yesterday. I noticed today as I was walking over to the station, it started to get a little warm.
So yeah, we've still got some summer to go.
Yep. But nice weather. I mean, it's much better than up in the 90s every day. That was very tiring.
Indeed. Yeah. I was wondering if you came in on 99 near Canby. No, you probably came in the other way.
We went through Canby.
Yeah. It was they closed that 99 due to a wildfire?
We didn't see anything. Same between there, Canby and Oregon City. There was nothing.
I know they closed it. Last week, I think it was.
I heard there was a fire, yeah, in that area.
Okay.
But I didn't see anything.
Wasn't there, yep. Kept hearing that you could take your animals to the Washington County Fairgrounds. Not the Clackamas County Fairgrounds.
No, seriously. Well, the Clackamas County Fair is open now. We saw it last night. It was functioning. So, and anybody who lives in that area knows the pain of the roads there have been for months now. They've been doing work, sometimes hard to even tell what they're doing, but they've blocked off intersections and roads and made it really a pain to drive in that area. And I was wondering if they were going to do something about that before the fair opened, because they did. So
that reminds me, my older brother Bruce lives on Savi Island, and before they opened up the new bridge there, this is probably 5 years ago now, that during September, October, the peak corn maize season, that it was about a 2 hour wait to get across that bridge, the one lane bridge. There was so much traffic.
Wow. That might be dissuading for people. You might want to go somewhere else.
It's much better now with the
good.
You have two lanes
good.
Going across there, so I haven't heard any problems. But
good.
Well, anyway, this is The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. And
unique, we believe, even in our region at least.
See. Yeah. We will, our plant of the month, we'll start out with Jim. A lot of things going on with peaches. Peaches.
Yeah.
We'll follow that by what we're harvesting this month. There's a lot of things. And maybe what we'll try to focus on, because there is so much going on, is how to harvest at the peak or to get peak flavors out of something.
Isn't that really the main benefit or one of the main benefits of growing your own food?
Yes, right.
Get it ripe, and eat it when it's flavored.
You can have soft fruit.
Yeah.
Soft tomatoes.
Yes. Oh, God, right. Make me hungry thinking about it, Glenn.
Also, we're going to invite our listeners to call our regular number, 503-231-8187, to talk about any garden experiments that you may be conducting this year or have completed or want to, and the results if you've completed it. Jim's always experimenting. It's the nature of the farm over there.
our farm. We call it a half plant factory, half research station. And my partner, Lorraine, is deep in it right now. She was telling me about her desire to get more cherry seeds. She's doing a lot of breeding work, and her breeding is like a lot of open pollinated. So she plants this a lot of seed, and then you have these little presents that come up, and hopefully one of them.
And then it has to bear fruit though, two or some years later.
It takes a little while, yeah. But of course, the first thing is survival. So
yeah.
If you're doing that, your first test is, do we have the plant? And then we can worry about the fruit. And so,
well, Jim, I want to go back. We're at 1:30 now here, but I want to follow up on something that we talked about a couple of months ago, and that I had started some trees from some cuttings, and they were starting to grow leaves. You said that wasn't really the ideal time to do it, but they were putting out leaves. Well, I'm sorry to say that none of those trees have survived.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, we don't have the music here. We need Joe. We could, but there is something that is coming up from underneath. And it was fairly sterile potting soil. I can't remember what I mixed in, but it's nothing that looks familiar to me. And so I'm wondering if, since there were some underground buds, is it possible that this one shoot, we'll call it, it's about a foot tall now, or maybe 10 inches, that could be, do we ever get shoots coming up from the underground part of cuttings?
It's not common, because normally you don't leave shoots, you don't leave buds on the basal part of a cutting. But if you had one, it certainly seems like it could happen. Yes, and of course, when you'll have another couple of months before it goes dormant.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, and then you can see.
which means I would just take the whole thing out and then chip away I'm not going to pull it out.
Yeah,
so bare, I still have a little bit of hope.
Essentially bare root the
yes.
the, mm-hmm. the plant once it's mm-hmm. gone dormant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll find out okay. what you got.
Yes, listeners, this was Seven Sun Flower Tree. It's a great bee plant.
Huh.
But anyway, I'll try to keep us posted on that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Okay, we do have a new garden stumper at the bottom of the hour. And then a little bit more on what Jim's been doing at the farm, the experimentation. And what was the half what? Half what?
Oh, half research station.
And half?
And half plant factory.
Plant factory. Okay, well, I think we'll be talking about the plant factory more than the research And then I thought I might give, I've talked about this before too, but it's interesting and it's worth knowing about how honey comes about from blossom to bottle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been doing most of the time. We'll have a new dirtbag dictionary term, documentary update. Jim will be at the Oregon State Fair. And what I'm trying to understand this month. And this one, particularly what I'm trying to understand, is just totally on me here. But I just haven't had the time to understand the rules of, and this is all as a result of the Olympics, rugby. And then I go back to also cricket. I don't understand the rules. I look at these highlights, you know, this woman for the U.S., I think, to get the bronze or something, you know, broke free for a 90-yard, do they even call it touchdown? I don't know. But anyway, so I watched that several times, I mean, a half a dozen or 10 even, and replayed it. It was just a 30-second thing. And sometimes the play just kind of stopped while the player had their hands on the ball, but they wouldn't move until the person made a move with the ball. So it's kind of very interesting. So, but I just haven't ever played them, so that's...
Yeah, it makes you wonder, do the people who grew up in England or
sure.
the British Empire understand American football?
Well, they understand basketball, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that was hard as the U.S. had to work. But anyway.
Rules are funny. I mean, I agree. Yeah. I never, because growing up, we never understood. We never played cricket. We never.
Yeah.
So how, yeah. you know, yeah, it's just a mystery.
Well, my wife actually went online and did a little bit of research, but and she said some things, but I don't remember what she said now. So.
The crickets are chirping, by the way, speaking of cricket.
Indeed, they are.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Okay, Jim, what's the most used tool you've had during the last month, 5 weeks?
You know, actually, the last most used tool yesterday was my battery-powered chainsaw.
Uh-huh, some of those experiments.
Well, I was removing failed apricots.
Yes.
Actually, it felt good. I mean, I was enjoying it because it was cool. You know, I mean, I had a light sweat, but nothing like I would have had, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Right. Good.
Yeah.
Mine is probably not a garden tool because I've been doing so much honey harvesting. It's called a hive tool, and it's just a little kind of mini metal pry tool because boxes just everything is stuck together with mostly wax, but sometimes honey is sticky, and then propolis too. But you couldn't keep bees without a pry tool or a hive tool. And we use it not only to pry things apart, but to scrape off wax or to pry out frames out of the boxes. And so that's been in my hand almost every day for the last month.
Great.
All right.
Great.
Okay. Well, here we are into the dirt bag. So let's give that number once again, 503-231-8187. That's if you have a garden experiment or a question. And that will be the number to call if you have the answer to the garden stumper coming up at 1:30. And if you get that correct, you will win a free garden hand tool sharpening from Cole Farm Store in Northeast Portland, Northeast 42nd and Alberta. Okay, Peach.
Well, this is the time. I was out harvesting peaches. I mean, I'm sure many listeners have already harvested them, but some varieties have been ripe for quite a while. But what's fascinating about peaches to me, and I've been growing them for a long time, they're not typically an easy plant, an easy fruit to grow this side of the Cascade Mountains as a lot of other prunus are not, apricots being the most difficult. But every year, we get a pretty decent crop of peaches. And one of the main characteristics of a good peach variety for this climate is resistance to peach leaf curl, which is a disease that makes it, as it sounds, the leaves curl up and typically will fall off. And if the tree is a vigorous tree, it can survive this defoliation, but unfortunately the flowers that have come on during that time also fall off, can't do anything more. They've lost all their vigor, and you don't get a crop. You may have a live tree, but you won't have any peaches. And then some trees, if they're not super vigorous, will die from peach leaf curl. Commercial growers don't have a problem with this because they spray, and it's a fairly easy disease to control by spraying. There's a small peach orchard between Canby and Oregon City that's been there for many, many, many years. Part of it's gone now. I'm not sure what the fate of it is going to be, but I stopped there several years ago and I asked the grower, I said, well, you know, what do you do? Because he's not growing, he's growing normal varieties of peaches. He said, well, I spray 7 times a year. Well, you know, I'm sure the vast majority of our listeners are not interested in doing that. So the challenge is with peaches in our climate is to find ones that are resistant to that disease. And also, bacterial canker can be a problem too. And that's where you have the dieback of branches and stuff, and you get gummosis on the trunk or on a branch.
Just to clarify here, that what causes peach leaf curl? Is it a virus, bacteria, fungus, the same with the canker?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the canker is bacterial.
Okay.
I believe the peach leaf curl is fungal, but I don't quote me on that because I'm not certain about that. But at any rate, I don't want to spray anything on our trees. We don't. So that's part of our research, is that, you know, a tree in at Northwoods Nursery that's going to survive and be propagated and marketed to our customers has to be able to grow okay in this mm-hmm. environment, this climate. So over the years, we've discovered peach leaf curl resistant varieties, and I would guess that probably some of our listeners have those already. One we call Oregon Curl Free, which is also Frost is another name for that. There's Salish Summer, which is a white flesh peach that was discovered up in Washington. There's Charlotte, which is a very nice flavored peach, which is resistant to peach leaf curl. We are working on new ones, and we have some pretty interesting things in the pipeline that I just, in fact, yesterday and the day before harvested a bunch and really a very nice, tasty fruit, very abundant crop. Again, no spray, and nice ones. Nectarines are sort of in the same category. They also get peach leaf curl. You could call it nectarine leaf curl, but it's more harder to pronounce. And so there's a Krybich was the first one that we introduced years ago. And I remember the man's name, but I never met him, and I don't know. I hope he still exists. And if any listener knows of this person, I'd love to know about him more. But his name is Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D, Roland Krybich, and I think he lived in Washington somewhere. And he had a leaf curl resistant nectarine.
Hmm.
And then we planted seeds of that a number of years ago, and we ended up with a seedling that was also peach leaf curl resistant and very nice large fruit, and that's called Pacific Pride. And we have another variety called Morton. It's an older variety of nectarine, very productive, very resistant to peach leaf curl, and early ripening too. So that's kind of what we're doing in that part of our peach world. But that's not all.
But wait.
So in 1990, I took my first trip to the Soviet Union with a group of people, a large group of folks, and that was my first adventure in that part of the world. And then I went again in 1991 and many years after that. But in 91, we went to Samarkand, Uzbekistan, and discovered a peach called, in English, the golden peach of Samarkand.
Hmm.
Well, one of the men in our group brought back some seeds and planted them. And those seeds have borne fruit over the years. And we have seedlings of that. And this year, we got a really good crop. Now, these are not, as far as we know, peach leaf curl resistant. My friend who grew them was in California, where peach leaf curl was not a problem. So we have them in a place where they're not getting rained on, and that's the clue with peach leaf curl. If you keep it out of the rain, you won't get it. But he had them out in California. So we've got these inside a place where they didn't get rained on, and we harvested a bunch this year. And Glenn, I'm in love with this peach. We have two goals in mind. One is to cross it with peach leaf curl resistant varieties to see if we can get one that's a hybrid that will have the quality of fruit that this does and be resistant to the peach leaf curl. And the other is to work with some people that we've met in the Dalles to grow fruit there. And it may be a new fruit for Oregon growers, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll describe it to you. It's a golden peach, no fuzz.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a nectarine. And it's freestone, and it is absolutely delicious. Every morning I eat them for breakfast on my cereal.
You didn't bring one for me, did you?
I wanted to really badly, but I didn't have time. I was, and
okay.
I know I'm really sorry, but anyway, I might have one next month. Who knows? How long they last under refrigeration, but it's really an amazing, amazing fruit. So peaches can be grown here. And you can get a good crop, and you know the care is reasonably minimal if you have a good resistant variety. And keep in mind those varieties like Frost or Oregon Curl Free, which are the same, Salish Summer, Charlotte, the Nectarines, Krybich, Pacific Pride, and Morton right now are the sort of stars in our firmament, and we'll continue looking for new ones.
I've been noticing the peach. I don't grow peaches at my place. But there are around the neighborhood, and I've noticed that there have been more successful in crops in the last several years.
Huh.
And I don't know if climate change has anything to do with that, you know, or a little warmer. You know, does that dry out the leaves sooner so we don't have the fungal spread?
Good question. It may not. Good question. I mean, we had peach leaf curl out at the farm this year. I mean, the ones that aren't resistant to it.
Oh.
So it's not.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can test your
we have
curl free ones.
Absolutely. We have a very good testing spot. So, yeah, it might be interesting that if you see a neighbor that has a peach, see if they know what variety it is. You know, that would be, but I mean, if it's clearly resistant, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a seedling or something too, but
yeah,
it might have some value.
Yeah, I ran by one just yesterday, I think. I thought, gosh, I should just go over there and pick some off the ground because there were dozens just in the street, just squished and,
ooh.
Yeah.
Oh boy! Oh boy!
Yeah.
Well, you know, it could be one of the. I mean, the Oregon Curl Free or Frost has been out in the market for probably 20 years now.
Yeah. Well, at least.
So, yeah.
Because I used to grow Frost.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
It's the peach. What's that?
Peaches are peachy.
Yes, indeed they are. Okay, Ty, are we ready? Got us going here. Okay, we're usually I do my tribute to. Musicians that have passed away in the last year, but for this one, I just could not wait until December for that. And this is somebody that I kind of started listening to more and more later on in life, and that's John Mayall.
Mm.
And he's been around. He put out a 70th birthday concert album, a double album, and he still had the pipes. And he put out a more recent one a couple of years ago. He might have been 88 at that time, but he died on July 20th, that 90.
Well, good
but, you know, he's most known for having so many who went on to be famous guitarists. And so our musical selections today are coming from his first, I don't know if they're his first three albums or not, but they're from 1966, 1967, and 1968. And for those of you who are not familiar with John Mayall at all, his probably most famous tune is Room to Move, which is great. But that came out in 1969, I believe. And this first one that we're going to listen to, Another Man, it might just be him doing everything, which is only singing, harmonica, and maybe the hand claps. I looked for that, but I couldn't find. But that's the only thing. We'll listen to this in entirety. It's just a minute and a half or something like that. It's called Another Man, from John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. John Mayall. John Mayall. It's just a lot that you can do with just the harmonica and voice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That reminded me, I was just telling you about the John Prine. I didn't know John Prine's music until after he passed away. And then I just really really enjoy it. And he has a song about feeding your children peaches. And it's a great song. I'll try to see if I can find it somewhere and send it to you.
Okay, we have a phone call, Jim.
Great.
What do we got?
This is Kristen.
Hi there. Thanks for calling. What you got?
Well, I have three questions surrounding toxins and poisons in the soil and transmissibility-ness.
Okay.
Well, one is, can I put the rhubarb leaves in my compost pile?
Yes.
Two is, I planted a couple milkweeds, and I'm wondering if they're going to put things in the soil that the surrounding plants don't like.
Well, I don't have a... Jim, do you have an answer for that one?
I
grow milkweed, and I can tell you right now that your two are going to be 50 next year.
Oh, good to know.
They do pull up pretty well, but they'll come back too. And I've let them spread.
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah. And I let them grow, not only hoping to attract the monarch butterflies, but they're great pollinator plants.
Right. That's my give back.
Those love those things. Okay. Question number three.
Third is, I have a 50 by 50 foot garden in my backyard filled with fruit trees and bamboo, but I'm surrounded by greed box rentals. And the landscapers that come in and do the land care around my garden use spray weed killer. So I'm wondering, I know like the air drift to be concerned about, but and if they're spraying a wild clematis vine that's 10 feet from my heritage fig tree, is that going to affect the fig tree and the grapevine that's living a couple feet away through the soil?
Well, it might be somewhat dependent on what they're using, but I kind of doubt it.
Okay. So and nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully they're using it responsibly, but the wild clematis is the non-native is that can be pretty invasive. I mean, it's considered a noxious weed.
It is so resistant too.
Yeah, but Jim, what do you think?
You know, we don't use herbicides hardly at all. I mean, you know, it's not something I have a great deal of knowledge about. But I don't think most of them are. But depend on what it would be. Like you said, Glenn, you know, if the Roundup type, goes into the plant and kills the roots, there's others that are just a burn down, you know, like Paraquat, which just kills the foliage and
everything.
You know, but it doesn't. It's not a. It's not in the plant itself.
Systemic,
right?
Yeah, which Roundup is.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that if you obviously you don't want to get Roundup on any of your plants that you're you value because it can really hurt them.
But and I think your 10-foot buffer is fortunate.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Okay. So. All right.
Yeah,
I look forward to having lots of milkweed babies to next year.
Yeah. Hey, yep.
Well, I hope you're enjoying your figs. Are you getting ripe fruit?
The first crop was so big and so abundant. I finally got my pruning timing right.
That's wonderful. Good. What variety is it?
They turn kind of brown. It's about a
75-year-old
tree.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Great. Well, you know, that's figs have a long history here in our area, and I'm glad you've got a nice old tree that's bearing fruit for you.
Yeah.
It's really taught me well. When I first moved here 25 years ago, I didn't even like figs, and now I'm watching the birds to see which figs they're going to start pecking at so that I could pre-pick them and yeah, but we're done with the first crop. I shared it wildly, and it was a good one.
Yeah. Excellent.
Great.
Well, thanks for listening.
So hopefully we'll just have enough sunshine. Thanks for all your
Just by the way, let us know when your second crop ripens. I'd like to hear about that when we're on one of our shows. It'd be nice to hear more about it.
Okay. Hopefully she'll take that
Yep.
Listen to that on the things on the radio. Okay, let's go to the garden stumper.
Okay.
It's time.
It is.
Now we have the theme. Somewhat. There we go. Okay. Well, this one could be pretty easy. But it may not be. And that is, first of all, I can give hints until we get the answer, but I don't even know exactly know how to pronounce this. What is trichome, or maybe it's just trichome indumentum?
Boy, that's so simple. Glenn, I don't know why you'd even bother to ask. I mean, geez.
Yeah, trichome indumentum. That sounds like kind of a Latin term, doesn't it?
It does.
It's used to describe something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll give it a few minutes here to see if anybody can come up with that one.
Madly opening, going through their pages of their Latin dictionary.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. And if you're the first caller with the correct answer, you will get a free sharpening of a garden hand tool from Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland. I'll keep giving hints to make it easier.
It's interesting that a question like that, you know, you just open up a whole new area of ones that I never thought about asking, like, what does a certain Latin name mean? I have lots of them I could ask, you know, like, but I won't.
Well, I mean, one of the, I can... We'll just see if anybody gets this. I mean, I mean, you could look that up pretty easily.
Yeah.
But we try to not to do that.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we hope so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And then there's another word that I'll, you know, if we don't get a call in the next few minutes here, I'll just keep giving hints here.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, what's going on in the garden and farm? But also this, you know, we're still asking for your experiments, gardener experiments. And Jim, I know you have some things going on the farm, so.
Yeah, so I was thinking of some things that might be similar to what other people are doing. So I mentioned in my email to you about doing staking, and it was sort of distressing to me to go out into some of my young fig plants and discover some of them that had such, well, distressing and exciting, I guess you could say, at the same time, but they had such a good crop that they actually had laid down. Which, you know, it's okay. That's not what they're supposed to do.
No,
they're supposed to be upright. So I staked them, and I would encourage anybody that has a laying down fruit tree.
Well, or hopefully you don't let it get that far.
Right. You know, if you haven't gone out there for a while, busy doing something else, as was I, you know, stake it up and
Did you thin any fruit or?
No, huh. I just tied them up. I want the fruit, but it worked okay. And so now they're back to vertical, not horizontal. So that was one thing we've been doing. And then I mentioned that I've been removing some dead trees with a little electric battery powered chainsaw, mm-hmm. which has been nice.
How big of diameter are those?
Well, some of them are a couple inches.
Okay. You know, and how old would those be?
3 years.
I was just thinking when you were mentioning that, that Lorraine wants, you know, more... Peach seeds?
Or peach pits.
Peach, yeah. And that, you know, so you have to get those to grow, which is the half, you know, takes a year. Yep. I mean, you'll know, but sooner than that. And then you have to wait a few more years to, you know, to get the big payoff. But I think, this would be my speculation, that on your farm, that payoff is coming every year for something else. So while you're waiting for one thing, you do discover the other thing. So it's not like you're not getting any reward.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, exactly. We have several experiments with prunus. We have experiments with pineapple guava. We have apples, pears, columnars we're working on, trying to, you know, again, focused on plants that would do well in the home garden. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's a lot of...
So fruit's coming on every year.
It's exciting.
I mean, right. It's, yeah, because it'd be tough to... You know, just wait all the time.
I know. I get tired of playing video games, you know.
Okay, we don't have any calls yet, so I'm going to ask for the description of another term that is related to this.
Okay.
And that is pubescent.
Mm.
What is pubescence? Okay. See, it's. I think you kind of know. I mean, you're kind of following the Latin here.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. 503-231-8187. I don't know that I have any experiments going on this year. Mm. Well, actually, I do have one, and that is that on two apple trees, rather than bagging the apples, I bagged the tree.
Oh.
I just put some floating row cover around it. I mean, it's not 100%. In fact, I couldn't get all the way around the tree. But I'm just thinking that there might be a portion of that tree that it has no insect damage to the apples.
Hmm.
So we shall see.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. I just held them on with clothespins. And I did that on a section of some espaliered apples, too. We should talk about espaliering at some point.
Sure.
And that I've really changed my thoughts on these. And that the only one that you should espalier is apples.
Mm.
Not pears, not figs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much growth.
Yeah, I remember talking years ago, you know, we've talked about espaliering and people wanted to do everything that way. And
yeah.
That's a good point, Glenn.
Okay. Not this time, though. Okay. We've got a call. Let's see if we've got a question or an answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
might have turned down your radio there.
No, sorry.
So we can hear you?
Yeah, okay. You were talking about peaches a while ago and nectarines.
Yep.
I heard one time that a nectarine comes off of a peach tree. Is that true?
Well,
talking about a nectarine tree and a peach tree.
Yeah, I mean, a nectarine is basically a form of peach. So, yes, you're correct. The Latin name for nectarine is the same, Prunus persica. But it is a different form. It's definitely a genetic different form of peach.
It wouldn't come off the same tree.
It doesn't. They don't bear on the same tree, but unless you grafted a nectarine on a peach tree.
Right.
But, oh, I see. There's two different kind of trees.
Yeah, yes. It's very, you know, a nectarine, of course, is quite different from a peach. And if you propagate.
Okay, that's all the question I had. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking.
Great. Okay. Well, I was hoping that was going to get us closer to our answer here, so I'll give another hint here. We're looking for either the trichome indumentum, what is that, or pubescent. Now, the word indumentum comes from Latin and literally means garment. Garment. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
And if we don't get a call in the next few minutes, I have another sentence that'll get it down there.
Man.
All right. Okay. What do we've got going? Oh, I'll talk about some honey here.
Sure.
No, let's take our first musical break.
Second
musical break. Excuse me. John Mayall. This is from his 1967 album, A Hard Road. And I think we're just going to have to get over that. Do people still refer to women as chicks?
My partner does.
Okay.
Tough.
So it's not necessarily a slur.
Because
John refers to.
If you're from New Jersey, apparently not.
Okay. We're from New Jersey here. Well, we'll play it. It's called It's Over.
Years ago I met a pretty little chick. We got together, baby, and the clock began to tick. The spring was overwhelmed and was broken in two. We found out that it just wouldn't do. It's over. She turned me away from her door. Yes, it's over, it's over. The little girl won't want me no more. thought it was a lonely night. She'd been drinking, wasn't treating me right. I went outside and took her for a walk. Things fell through when we started to talk. I meant so. She told me we were murdered. Yes, it's over, it's over. The little girl don't want me no more. No more the kisses I was aching for. All I got is memories of how we were, and it's over. She turned me away from my dog.
It's over.
That's a fun song.
Yeah.
I got to tell you a quick story, Glenn.
Okay.
So on Monday, every year, my grade school schoolmates, we meet. And this year, a woman came to the meeting who I hadn't seen in, 65 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And I had taken her out on a date in the second grade.
Wow.
And we went to the circus, and she threw up.
From a ride or just?
Who knows?
Oh, okay.
Whatever it was. And we both like, it was amazing to see each other. And we both remembered this, you know. And that was, we never went on another date.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny, you know. I was thinking about, like, it's over. It was over in the second grade.
Yeah, John, we all may have been talking about you.
Yeah.
That was from 1967. Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you a short primer here on, we've got to get one more, another hint here, since we still don't have any answers to what is trichome indumentum or pubescent. So we know that the word indumentum comes from Latin and literally means garment. And here's a hint. This is just going to almost give it away. The surface of a plant that has trichomes is called pubescent. Okay?
Hmm.
Okay. If you know what those mean, or just give us any kind of inkling that you might have a guess, 503-231-8187. Okay. Honey. And we'll break in as soon as we get a call. Somebody's got to tackle this one. Honey starts as nectar. And nectar is what plants freely produce to attract insects. It's not really that difficult for plants to make a carbohydrate such as nectar. And they use it as a reward to entice insects to come to their blossoms so that the insects will pick up pollen, which is very expensive, so to speak, for the plant to make. It takes a lot of resources. And that's how they fertilize each other with pollen grains. So it's very important that the plant, to continue its progeny, that I see a phone call is coming in, Jim. Okay. So the plant makes nectar to attract the insects. And the honeybees, they will, and I'm just going to talk about honeybees here as far as pollination goes. A bee that is out to collect nectar doesn't collect pollen on purpose. Hold that thought. We've got a call.
Okay.
Okay. Are you narrowing us down here?
Hey, are you there?
Good morning. We're here.
Hi, this is Bob Wise in Portland. And I love bees and I love honey. And I always like getting it when I'm in Europe because I can get the thyme and rosemary honey.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I have a question about my pear tree. I've had a
Bosque
pear that's been awesome and healthy and for 10 years, and now it's getting some kind of rust spots on the leaves, and the fruit are shriveling, and it happened last year. It looked fine until maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and it began to happen again this year.
How big are the pears that
these
are shriveling?
Pears, well, they're, you know, maybe some small ones are maybe 4 inches, but there are several pears that are bigger than that. I mean, we have clusters that
are
maybe 5 or 6 inches.
All right, so these are fully fertilized pears.
Right.
They're not the ones that are going to drop off.
Pollinated.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Jim? I've noticed these orange spots on my pear leaves, too, but it doesn't seem to have affected the fruit.
So this, last year it was really bad. The fruit really shriveled up, and some are shriveling this year, but maybe it's, you know, maybe there's not enough fertilizer in there, but.
No, I don't think it's a fertilizer issue. Have they been getting enough, water?
Yeah, I water it pretty well, like every two weeks. We watered it well.
Okay.
But these, is this a fungus or a disease I have to worry about, or should I just kind of monitor it for now?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'm puzzled a little bit about that. It sounds like a rust when you, as you describe it, the orange part, the orange spots. But I'm not an expert when it comes to such things. And I hope that this still exists. But when we have a pest or a disease problem that we're not sure what it is, we can take it to the County Extension Service, and they can help identify it. I would probably do that. You know, take a few leaves and see what you can see if you pursue it that way. Because you want to. It's probably important to know what it is and see if there's some way to deal with it that doesn't require any heavy duty spraying.
So my garden is almost totally spray free.
Yeah,
I've got all, you know, roses that don't need any spraying. Anything gets sick, kind of like a Luther Burbank, it's gone, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's not rust, really. It's just one spot, and it's, you know, it's pretty good size. It's, I mean, it's not huge, much smaller than a dime, but pretty bright orange.
That's what you have on yours?
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to necrophy that where the rust is. It just drops off when the leaf drops off. I mean, it's still there. And I don't know that it's related to the pears, the shriveling of the pears. So if you do contact the Extension Service, call us back, you know, next month and see what they say.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Right, thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You bet.
Yeah,
thank you.
Bye. Okay, we're going to got another call there. See if they're going to figure out what this pubescent or trichome indumentum. Yes. Okay. Let's see what we got here.
Hi. Am I on?
You're going to be. I think so. Okay. Nope. May have lost them. Well, I'll continue on then. So the bee goes to collect nectar, or the bee goes to collect pollen. They don't do both at the same time, on purpose. But when a bee is collecting nectar, it also might just inadvertently pick up some pollen. And they've got hairy bodies, and so they go to the next plant, and some of it gets sucked in there to that sticky stigma.
Voila.
Right. And so we can have pollinization at that point. Not necessarily fertilization. That's we have to have that pollen grain germinate later on. But anyway, that's not the point. The bee then swallows that nectar into its honey stomach or honey crop, or sometimes it's referred to as the social stomach, separate from the the stomach. It's before the stomach that digests that. And if the bee gets hungry, it can let a little bit of that nectar go through. But it does release an enzyme, a protein called invertase, which will start the conversion of the mostly sucrose that is picked up, that's in nectar, to fructose and glucose. That bee flies back home. It regurgitates that to a house bee, as we call it. And that bee swallows it also into its honey stomach and also adding this invertase. And then it takes it up and puts it in the hive where it wants to be. And then it has to evaporate a lot of the water, because nectar might be 90% and honey might be 18%. A lot of evaporation that goes on there. We'll come back to that after we handle this phone call. Are we ready to go, Ty? Okay.
Hi, am I there?
You're there. What you got for us?
Wade with Tree Artistry Landscaping and Tree Service. I thought I might have, I had some questions about the gentleman that just called. It sounds like, first of all, his trees are rather mature if they're producing fruit that large. But my question was, does he water? One was, first of all, every 2 weeks might not be enough during these extreme, what we have had up to now, extreme droughts, and most summers have been like this, recent summers. And then I wonder, did he water the leaves? Or did he just water the ground? Because I think the chlorine in the water helps keep down. I water my roses. Of course, I water the ground, but I water the leaves. And I haven't had any aphid problems or what have you. Yeah.
Well, what you can do is an experiment and do that on some of your plants and not on some of the other ones.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. That'd be cruel.
Well, then you don't know.
Yeah, but I'm not going to become Pavlov or something, cut a hole in the dog's side so I can see how he digests his food.
Well,
he sewed a piece of plastic back in and could watch it like a window. I'm serious. The guy is sick. I can't stand this stuff. But okay.
Yeah.
That's another topic we won't go
to. Yes. Right.
No, I would never experiment in that regard. I mean, you could probably look at plenty of examples where people aren't doing it. And all I'm saying is, look, I called before and talked about how you don't have to spray your roses for aphids with pesticides. You just spray them high-powered, just the hose.
Sure. Yeah.
Pressure, and you just blast them out of there. They live on the underside, the protected side, and... it takes them a long time, if at all,
right,
to come back to that.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing that there's certain...
Alberta spruce.
He had pear trees, and one of the things about...
It's the same way. You can blast them and keep that browning. A lot of times elder,
right,
Alberta spruce, you know, determine... They get brown spots, and they can eventually die and look so bad that you cut them down or what have you.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, those are good suggestions.
Enjoy it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I'll have to continue on my honey thing next month. Mm-hmm. But because we want to give time for Jim to say where you can come see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. And I just wanted to.
So, what's that? Oh, we got another call, Jim.
Oh.
Okay. So let's get this. Okay. Let's get this dirtbag.
Okay. Yep.
Dictionary or question answered. Okay. Go ahead. Good morning.
Oh, is this me?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Hi. So I was on your pubescence.
Yes.
And so, yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that meant approaching puberty, and I didn't know if plants had puberty, and that was pretty confusing. So I looked it up, and it said something about fuzz, which suggested your other word. So, I mean, is it? Peach fuzz.
And that's exactly right. That's the condition.
Just like I had when I was pubescent.
Yep, yep. That's where the word, you know, comes from.
Yeah.
The plants have the same thing.
Yep, yeah. Well,
plants besides peach?
Well, I'll go on here. It says trichomes. The surface of a plant that has trichomes is called pubescent. Trichomes can have many different structures and functions, including hairs, glandular hairs, scales, and papillae. They can serve many purposes for plants, such as protecting against frost. Trichomes can keep frost from reaching the plant's surface cells. I like that. It also reduces transpiration. Trichomes can help plants lose less water, increasing light reflectance. In desert species, trichomes can help increase the amount of light that is reflected. Pollution. Specialized glandular trichomes can produce compounds that attract insects and deter pests, and it can protect against environmental stresses. Trichomes can act as a barrier against both biotic and abiotic environmental factors, and they vary depending on the environment. For example, peach fuzz, also known as trichome indumentum, can help peaches retain water in semi-arid conditions. So there you have it. And if you stay on the line and Ty will take us off the air, we will get your contact information, your phone and your email address, and you will get a free garden tool, a hand garden tool sharpened at Cully Farm Store. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. All right. We got that one answered. I thought that was pretty appropriate.
That's
could be easy there.
Awesome. That's great.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes here for... sure. Oh, do you want to mention the our Dirtbag Dictionary turn?
Let's do it next time.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, so last year I helped organize a booth at the Oregon State Fair in Columbia Hall, which is air-conditioned, by the way, and we're doing it again this year. We're right across from the Oregon Authors, and we promote the documentary film and talk to folks about how important it is to protect Oregon's farmland. So I encourage anybody listening to stop by. I'm there some of the time, not all the time, but you see what we're up to. It's kind of fun. We have really some cool bumper stickers, and we also have candy for people to eat. And then also I have an assignment for the listeners. Oh. So I have mentioned several times, I think, on the show about the website that you can go to watch this documentary film. And we have two versions, a 25-minute one and an 83-minute one. So for the next month, I would like all listeners to go to the website, anoregonstory.com, anoregonstory.com, and watch one of those versions. And then tell us at the next show, call in and say, wow, that was the best thing I ever saw. I learned so much. Or what a terrible film. I would never dream of looking at it again. Anyway,
chances are they're not going to say that.
I know. I think it's a wonderful film. And Tom McCall, our governor from many years ago, makes some beautiful speeches. And I get emotional every time I watch it. So I hope you all can do that. Anyway, that's anoregonstory.com.
And Jim will be at the Oregon State Fair some of those days, starting when and ending when?
The 23rd is the first day of the fair, August 23rd, and it ends on Labor Day, September 2nd. I will definitely be there in the afternoon of Labor Day, and I'll be there the afternoon of the 27th, and I can't remember all this. All I'm scheduled to be there, but
okay.
But love to see a listener stop by and
say, you have an endless loop playing?
That's the plan. We'll see. Okay. But the loop will just be a 3-minute teaser, of course.
Yes, okay.
Not the whole film.
Okay, good. Stay away from that because you'll get tired of it. Okay, we're out of time, Jim.
It's been fun, Glenn.
Indeed it has. Thank you. Thank you, Ty. I appreciate it. This is The Dirt Bag, a garden variety show. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. Be well. We'll be back in 4 weeks. Well, let's go out with John Mayall on his last tune here called She's Too Young.